Welcome to the Sagebrush Trail. Stories of the West, from the frontier to the Yukon. I'm Mardeth, reading Crossing the Plains, Days of 57 by William Audley Maxwell. Chapter 9, Mysterious Visitors. The next following day, as we wended our way among the sand dunes, alkali flats, and faded sagebrush, there came to us, whence we knew not, three men equipped with a small wagon covered with white ducking arched over bows similar to the covering on most of the emigrant wagons, drawn by two large, handsome, well-harnessed horses, all having a well-to-do appearance that made our dusty, travel-worn outfits look very cheap and inferior. They told us that they were mountaineers of long experience on the plains, well acquainted with the Indians, and familiar with their habits and savage proclivities. They said that the Shoshone Indians were very angry at the white people who were passing through their lands, that this hostility recently had been further aroused by certain alleged acts of the whites along the emigrant road, and that the feeling was now so intense that even they, our informants, were alarmed, notwithstanding their long, intimate, and friendly intercourse with these Indians, and believing themselves no longer safe among the tribe. They were anxious to get out of the Shoshone country, therefore they requested the privilege of placing themselves under the protection of our large train, until we should have passed out of the Shoshone lands and into those of the Paiutes, which tribe they said was known to be friendly toward the white race. One of these men was a specially picturesque figure, weighty, with large square shoulders, well-formed head, full brown beard cropped short. He wore a deerskin blouse, leathern breeches, a broad, stiff-brimmed hat, low crown, flat top, decorated with a tasseled leather band, a fully loaded ammunition belt, a combination makeup of cowboy, mountaineer, and highwayman. The three men spoke plain English, with a free use of frontier adjectives. Having received permission to take temporary protection by traveling near us, they placed themselves at the rear of our train, and that night pitched camp slightly apart from our circle of wagons. Some of our men visited them during the evening, eager to hear their tales of adventure, and listened open-mouthed to descriptions of life among savage associations in the mountain wilds, jungles, and all the desert plains. The visitors dwelt with emphasis on the threatening attitude of the Shoshone Indians towards the immigrants, warning us that our position was hazardous, with caution that there was special risk incurred by individuals who wandered away from the train, thus inviting a chance of being shot by redskins ambushed among the bunches of sagebrush. They were especially earnest, as they assured us of the peril there would be in loitering away from the body of the company, as they had noticed some of our boys doing that day while hunting for sage fowls. After a while, he of the big hat inquired, and seemed almost to tremble with solicitude as he spoke. "Are you prepared to defend yourselves in case of an attack?" Here, unpleasant surmises gave place to distinct suspicions in the minds of some of our older men. They regarded that question as a giveaway. All the day since these three joined us, we had felt that they might be spies and in league with the Indians, so now not a few of us were giving closest attention, with both ears and eyes. An answer was ready that we were prepared and waiting for the encounter with 125 shots for the first round, that we could reload as rapidly as could the Indians, and had ammunition in store for a long siege. The actual fact was that though every man of us had some sort of shooting iron, they were not formidable. In kind, these varied well through the entire range of infantry, from a 4-inch six shooter to a 4-foot muzzle loader, and from a single-barreled shotgun on up to a Sharps repeating rifle. The weapon last mentioned carried a rotating cylinder for 5 shells and was the latest thing in quick-firing repeating arms of that time, but there was only one of that class in the train. Had we been seen on muster standing at present arms, the array would have been less terrifying than comical. Just how our visitors received our bluff were the references to preparedness for battle, we could not know. The next morning, these mysterious strangers took position in the rear of our train once more, carrying a small white flag mounted on a pole fastened to their wagon. Upon being asked the purpose of the flag, they replied that it served as a signal to anyone of their number who might go beyond view, enabling him to determine the location of the wagon. Captain John reminded them that according to their statements, wandering out of sight was too hazardous to be done or considered, adding that, therefore, there did not seem to be any need of the flag, and he wanted it to be taken down. It came down. During the noon hour stop that day, while the doctors were dressing Mr. Wood's wounded arm, he obtained a first look at our 3 protégés. He at once indicated the man wearing the big brown hat and stated excitedly, but confidentially, to those of our company who were near him, "I believe that man was with the Indians who killed my wife and child." That statement naturally created a much greater feeling of uneasiness among us. The assertion was whispered around, and every man of us became a detective. The leading men of our party put their heads together in council. The situation was more than ever grave, and the suspense distinctly painful. We feared something tragic would happen any hour. Mr. Wood was asked to obtain another view of the man and endeavor to make his statement more definite if he could. His wound and the terrible shock he had sustained 2 days previously had so prostrated him that he was unable to make haste. Arrangements were made to disguise him and have him go where he could obtain a good view of the 3 men, but his condition prevented it. Later in the afternoon, the 3 men afraid of Indians announced we had passed out of the territory of the savage Shoshones, and they felt it would be safe for them to dispense with our kind escort. Therefore, after camping near us that night, they would withdraw and bid us a thankful goodbye. We camped that night on a level place where there was sagebrush 3 and 4 feet high and thick enough to make good cover for an enemy, our people having become thoroughly distrustful of the 3 men who had made themselves appendages of our train, feared an attack would be made on our camp that night. Suspicion had developed into a fixed belief that the trio were confederates of the Shoshones and had come to us under a pretense of fear on their part in order to spy out the fighting strength of our company. The place where they halted their wagon and prepared to spend the night was not more than 100 yards from where our vehicles were arranged in the usual hollow circle with the campfire and the people enclosed. When darkness set in, guards of our best men, armed with the most effective guns we had, were quietly distributed about the camp, the chosen men crawling on their hands and knees to their allotted positions in order that the 3 strangers should not know our arrangements. There was an understanding that if there should be an attack during the night, the first thing to do, if possible, was to shoot those 3 men, for under the circumstances, any attack occurring that night would be deemed completion of proof that they were responsible for it, and for any atrocity that might follow or be attempted. The night passed without notable happening, except that at the break of day, the 3 men in their wagon silently stole away. There was a feeling of great relief on being rid of them, but there remained some apprehension of their turning up at some unguarded moment and unpleasant place to make us trouble. for their absence did not remove the impression that they had come among us to gauge our desirability as prey and the feasibility of overpowering our entire train. Join me next time for more Western adventure in Crossing the Plains, Days of 57 by William Audley Maxwell, here on the Sagebrush Trail.